Thank you, Jenna and Gwendolyn. That's beautiful. Thank you. Well, welcome. Thank you all for coming out today. Beautiful Alaskan summer day. Thank you for coming and welcome. Our theme for the month of June is accountability. So halfway through, I decided it might be good if I looked it up and see what the dictionary had to say about accountability. Accountability is subject to having to report, explain, or justify. It is being answerable, and a synonym is responsible. The theme that National kind of had out for today was creating a culture of accountability. And as I looked at that, and I looked at different sources that talked about accountability, particularly in religious or in spiritual type venues, what occurred to me is that we really have a strong culture of accountability right here at the Alaska Center for Spiritual Living. And I had a whole suite of different things that people could do or you could look at to foster this sense of accountability. But so what I thought I'd do today instead was just to focus on three of those that I really thought could explain how and why we have this culture of accountability here at the center. So my 3 points today are creating a culture of accountability, number two, don't take life so seriously, and number three, don't be on the wrong side. So first of all, creating a culture of accountability. Dr. Richard Kreischer wrote a book, Understanding and Developing Christian Accountability. And he says, accountability allows us to share our lives with one another in deep, introspective ways. This helps us to get to know ourselves and others more profoundly, fostering deeper connections. When we are reliable and trustworthy, we are building a strong foundation from which trust flourishes. Well, you see, that's exactly what we do in our classes, is we create a safe environment where you are free to be yourself, warts and all, and nobody's going to judge you, nobody is going to put you down, and you can be your authentic self, warts and all. And that's okay, because this is the place from which then we can build that trust. We do it in our classes. Number two is building encouragement. Ernest Holmes wrote in Words That Heal Today, wrote this in 1949, we reach God in others by reaching out from God within the self. Always in God will others respond to the God in us, but never beyond the level of our inward spiritual awareness. From that awareness, we encourage others to stand up to the obstacles that they may be confronting in life. And make no mistake, we all confront obstacles in our life. I have never met anyone yet that has lived an obstacle-free life. If I do, I will report back, I promise. And it's how we respond to those obstacles in life. And when we can come together as a group, as a family, as a congregation, as a spiritual movement, we can encourage each other as we face those challenges in life. I mean, I know that I have said it before, and I've said it again and again. You can beat that addiction. You are greater than that obstacle in your life. You are a divine product of God. And you are greater than any of the obstacles that you have in your life. Number three, being observant of our thoughts and words. Our sacred reading today, and I I hope I grabbed a copy of it. If not, but the sacred reading that Cindy had was dead spot on. And we believe that our thoughts are creative. And it's important for us to watch those thoughts, to watch what we say. In the Foundations class, we devote a whole section to watching our self-talk. And every time we go through that class, I'm amazed as I realize that I slip back and I fall into the habit of negative self-talk. It is so easy to do. So we want to watch what we say. Love and Law. This is written between 1918 and 1920. You and I are intelligent sinners using creative word for that which we will constructively or destructively use. And that creative word which we use becomes the law unto the thing whereunto it is sent and becomes the concept behind it and projects the thing, creates the thing in our life. In other words, our thoughts become things and our words become our reality. In Richer Living, which he wrote in 1953, the law of mind gives us back our words in form, and this is not always a pleasant experience. Students of science of mind should make an honest attempt to control their speech, to watch their words, and always say that which is loving and wise, which is not always easy to do. Point number two is don't take life too seriously. It will be 1 year ago tomorrow. Ann and I walked into Murcia, Spain. Last Friday was 1 year celebration from the time we walked into Santiago and completed the Camino de Santiago. Well, it took us 3 days more to get to Murcia, which is a tiny little fishing village right on the coast, and it has these beautiful white sand beaches, and it's so pristine, and it's just beautiful. There's no trash. It's just gorgeous. And we were there for 3 days of rain, and we'd even bought swimming suits because it was warm. Not when we were in the beautiful little fishing village of Murcia. But one day the sun did come out, and I walked down the pier, and I spotted a fisherman, and he was pulled into his slip. He had like a lawn chair stretched out, and he was sitting back just enjoying this beautiful day, and he was puffing on his pipe. And it reminded me of a story I had heard about a wealthy American industrialist that was traveling abroad, and it encountered exactly the same thing. He had encountered a fisherman sitting back, just enjoying the day. And this industrialist went up to the fisherman and he said, "Why are you not out fishing?" And he said, "Oh, it's had a great day. I'm already back in. I've been out. I got three beautiful, big, big tuna. My family and my extended family are going to be eating great for the next 2 or 3 weeks." And the industrialist says, "Well, why aren't you out fishing for more?" And he said, "Well, why would I do that?" "Well, because you could sell them at the market. I've seen the prices down at the market. You could get more money." He said, "Oh, what would I do with that?" And he said, "Well, you could save it up and you could buy a new engine for your boat." "Why would I want that?" "Well, you could get out to the best grounds faster and catch more fish." "Oh, what would I do with that?" "Well, if you caught more fish, you could save it up and you could save it up. Then you could buy a second boat." "What would I do with that?" "Well, you'd hire another crew. And if you saved your money from that, then you could invest in it and you could have an entire fleet." "What would I want with a whole fleet of boats?" "Well, then you'd have enough money. You could do whatever you wanted to. You could do anything. Why, you'd be able to sit on the dock and just enjoy the day and smoke your pipe." And the fisherman just puffed his pipe and closed his eyes. And And I think we're like that a lot of times. We get so wrapped up in our lives, in the rat race, in the struggle to get ahead, to do this, to do that, that we forget to look at those simple pleasures. We forget to smell the roses. We forget that what's really, really important in our lives. And in terms of accountability, this is the accountability that we have to ourselves, is to stop and smell the roses and not to constantly press on and on. I wish I would have known this lesson 30 years ago. Our children today are learning a story, and it's really great. It's a little boy that gets all wrapped up in his games, and he doesn't take the time to spend time with his little sister and to do some of the other things that are important in life. And at the end of this story, this little boy learns that. But I think it's so powerful that we're able to teach our youth the same principles that we do in here. Okay, my third point is don't be on the wrong side. This is another Camino story. Man related it to me. I cannot swear to the veracity of it, but I will share it with you. And he told me about the experience of walking through very, very Catholic Spain. And he was what you might call a lapsed Catholic. It had been a long, long time since he'd been in a cathedral or a church at all. And as he walked across Spain, I mean, that's what you do. You go from cathedral to, and as he went into these places, he began to feel kind of guilty because he was so far separated from his Catholic roots. And one day he decided that he was going to go to confession. And he hadn't been to confession in a long, long time. So he went into the cathedral. He went up to the confessional, man, he didn't even know where to go or what to do, but he saw the little door, and so he went in and he got in, and the first thing, you know, he sat down, and the first thing he noticed is how comfortable the chair was. And he remembered growing up, it was just an old, hard, wooden, straight-backed chair with no padding or anything, and this was just right. It was soft but firm. It was, oh, it was really a nice, comfortable chair, and he kind of enjoyed that. Well, he sat down, and, you know, as his eyes started to adjust to the darkness and whatnot, it looked like there were some sparkly things up there, and he got to looking and realized there were glasses. And he looked further, and there were some really nice crystal decanters. And then he made it out. It was a fully stocked bar. And he thought, my goodness, they had Guinness on tap. And as he looked around and his eyes adjusted more, he looked down and there was a humidor. And it had stocked with magnificent, you know, freshly rolled cigars. He had these exquisite cigars. Oh, wow. And in between there, he looked, there was a whole row of finest European chocolate. And he thought, wow, this is not what I remembered from the confessional at all. And about that time, the little door slid back, and he could tell that there was somebody over on the other side, and he could kind of look through, and he could make out the silhouette of the priest. And I says, oh, forgive me, Father, for I have sinned, and it's been a long time since I've been to confession. It's been months. Father, it's been years. Father, it's been over a decade since I've been to confession. But he says, and I must admit, you guys have really made some improvements. Why, it's much more inviting and accepting than I ever remember. And a kind of hiss came from the other side. The priest suddenly said, get out of there, you nitwit. You're on the wrong side. And, you know, we're kind of like that sometimes. We inadvertently we inadvertently end up on the wrong side. In our Power of the Word class, It was a joke. It's not really. We listed all of the qualities of God. We sat and we brainstormed and we listed the qualities of God. And I wrote a few of them down. And these are what we see to be the qualities of God. Grace, joy, abundance, peace, love, creativity, generosity, truth. And then we drew a line and we listed the qualities of man. Man's nature. What is the nature? What is our true nature? And we listed, you know, what is our nature as man? And it was amazing. So many of the things were the same. Grace, joy, abundance, peace, creativity, love. All of these things are the same. But then we discovered that there were some other traits of man, some qualities that we have as human beings. And they didn't necessarily go with those. Things like fear and sadness and greed and dishonesty. And so we have this mixed bag within us. We have within us, yes, we have love, but we also have fear and separation. We have joy, but we also have a sadness. We have generosity, but we also have greed. We have truth, and yet we also have dishonesty. And it's that other side of us that is the wrong side. And we all have a wrong side. It's part of who we are. But that is the magnificent part about this teaching and who we are, is that we are given the ability to change our thinking. When we're in a position of greed and we have stuffed down our natural generosity, we can step back and say, I can change my thinking and I can change my life. I can step back and I can embrace the generosity that is truly mine. When I am in a position of fear, I am afraid, I can step back and say, no, I can embrace the love that is me. When I am in a position of lack and limitation, there's not enough to go around, I've got to elbow somebody out of the way to get my fair share, I can step back and say, no, I live in an abundant universe and there is plenty to share and to spare. That we do live in an abundant universe. The conclusion, what I really would like for everybody to take away today, don't take life too seriously. We are already sitting in heaven to the degree that we are willing to sit back and accept it and enjoy it. When you do find yourself on the wrong side, step back and take time to remember the truth of who you really are and be accountable to and for yourself. This is usually the time when I do the healing treatment at the end. I do a prayer for everyone. But this morning, I opened my mail and I had a prayer from a dear friend. Many of you know her, Reverend Cynthia James. And she sent a prayer out to all of the ministers on the listserv. And it really touched me. So rather than the healing prayer for everybody today, I'm just going to read Reverend Cynthia's prayer this morning. We simply pause in the moment to re-remember and recognize the infinite presence of the divine, all-knowing, all-encompassing, ever-expanding, and ever-evolving. It is the energy, the breath, and life of all, in all, and through all. It is my life, and it is the life of every person, animal, planet, and life experience. This remembrance guides us all to states of a deep peace that passes all human understanding. It allows us all to step back and rest in a place of abiding trust that is well in our minds, bodies, souls, and all that we serve. We gently exhale. And it is from this place we surrender, we open, we allow God to be the consistent and constant reminder that we are supported and guided in every experience that life offers. We are protected, and the consciousness of wholeness supersedes every appearance of thought, of lack or limitation or separation. There is a clarity that we need resist nothing, because this grand and glorious universe is conspiring for our greatness. And so with great thanksgiving, we breathe in love, joy, peace, happiness, abundance, and success. We move into this day expecting grace and goodness to flood our lives and our life choices. The soul rejoices as we rest in the arms of sweet goodness. It is from this place I release this prayer unto the law of the divine, and trust that magnificence is the order of this day and all days. And so it is. So.